Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting, broadcasting live right now on godfathersofpodcasting.com. And in case you didn't know, we have been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. As always, archives of this program are available on every major podcast provider, including the big boys, Apple, Google, Amazon, and our friends at Spotify. We'll talk about them in a second. And so many, many more. The video archives of this show, as always, are exclusively available right here on godfathersofpodcasting.com. When you're on our site, check out the shop, buy some merch like this. All of our stuff is super high quality, and we back our products 100%. You will be satisfied. You can send us a text right now or get at us on WhatsApp. The phone number's up on the screen. It's 437-375-2000, 437-375-2000. If you have a question or a comment, you want to talk to our guest, whatever is on your mind, give us a shout. If you got a good question or you got a good take, we will read it live on the air. Hello, everyone. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Erica M. and Michael Williams to my Steve Anthony. This is Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell and my bro Danny O.
I know where you're going with this.
Wait, hold on.
What?
You're Steve Anthony?
Yeah.
Oh, that is that the role you want to take?
I mean, he had a good time in life.
No doubt.
He had a good time in life, man.
Come on, man. Shouts to Ed the Sock. You know what I'm saying?
Right?
Michael Williams.
I hate to tell you this, though, Dan. Tid is the Michael Williams of this crew.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Right. Wow. Well, he is darker than me, so I suppose that would make sense.
It's all on my soul. I'm like Gary Owens up in this motherfucker.
Yeah. It's a dark heart. Super huge shout out, true, of course, to the one and only Master T. And
right?
You'll understand why we're going to be talking about him in the show. But big shout out to him and to Roxy. God bless you if y'all watching, and thank you for everything you've done for this industry and for me and my career. And we'll get more into that, I'm sure, later on today.
Speaking of Much Music alumni, last night I had a chance to catch up with friend of the show, longtime friend of the show and friend of ours, George Strombolopoulos. He was, as usual, as he does many, many nights on Instagram Live, he was broadcasting, and I was in there watching his show, and all of a sudden he's like, sending me a thing. He's like, hey, come jump in with me. So I did, and we sat there and had an amazing catch up, talked for well over an hour, just shooting the shit, telling old stories, having lots of laughs. It was hilarious to me how just our old stories, reminiscing stuff that happened back in the day, people were just fascinated, eating it up. I know there's a whole bunch of people right now that are tuned in that are first time viewers that caught last night's broadcast with George, and they were all, oh, we're gonna watch tonight's show. They all decided to follow us on Instagram and everything else. Thanks to all the members of the late night crew with Strombo who decided to follow us and jump on board for tonight's program. Hope you enjoy it and hope you have some fun. George will be joining us sometime again in the near future for a return engagement, but he is like jam-packed with projects right now. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna try and catch up with him in the spring. There's a lot of stuff going on right now that's so weird, and I want to ask you guys your thoughts on it. So the first one I'm going to throw out there, this story has been all over the news cycle for the last 24, 48 hours. Peter Dinklage, award-winning actor. Of course, everyone remembers him from Game of Thrones and so many other projects.
Elf.
Nip
yes,
Tuck.
That one too. He's pissed right now at Disney. And the reason he's pissed, a lot of people get pissed.
Everyone's
at
getting
Disney.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
A lot of people get pissed at Disney. The reason Peter Dinklage is pissed at Disney is because Disney is making a live action remake of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And Peter Dinklage's issue is, Disney, you decide to be really progressive and cast a Latina lead as Snow White, which is cool, but you still want to carry on these old-fashioned stereotypes of seven fucking dwarves living in a cave together. Like, come on. And Disney has fired back and said, hey, we're not interested in old stereotypes. We're trying to update it and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
Peter Dinklage's response is, go fuck yourself. I'm wondering what you guys think and what your thoughts are on this story.
Sounds to me like Peter Dinklage was supposed to play the lead dwarf and didn't get the part or some shit.
I doubt that. That dude can write his own ticket.
He can. And the thing that I find interesting about it is, being a little person, you would think that he would be, I think, advocating for, you know, more representation in film. With seven dwarves being obviously integral to this story, how do you do the remake without them? What is his thoughts on what they're doing with these seven dwarves? Like, has the script been given to him to know that they are being done in a presented in a stereotypical way? Or, like the Latina cast Snow White, are they revolutionizing these seven dwarves into maybe not bumbling fools and idiots, but some, you know, heroes even? I mean, how do we even know what the story is before you come out and say that you're upset with it? Because you have to cast seven little people, do you not?
I don't know. Maybe you could do Snow White and the seven average height males.
Do you? I mean, okay. Because if you've already cast, hold on, if you've already cast, this just came to me, if you've already cast Snow White in a Latino role, mm-hmm. you could do Snow White and the seven Mayans. And if anybody, Mayans are very, very short Mexicans. Like, I'm not even playing around. I'm not being like, they're very short. So you keep it real. I'm telling you, what's probably going to end up happening is you're going to end up having like Snow White and the Seven Cats.
Right? Yeah, I was just about to say what they need.
You know what I mean?
They need to do like a mashup. They need to do a Disney mashup, like Snow White and the 101 Dalmatians.
Here's
saying, like, who's going to get mad at that?
Here's my bigger question and problem with this, though, with like Peter Dinklage's thing. And it makes you think, because Peter Dinklage is the, you know, like, he's the top of the stepladder. He is the guy, you know what I mean? Like, right? Like, so, and there's Brad Williams out there. There's Hornswoggle, Dylan Postal, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of other.
God bless Fern Troyer. Rest in peace.
There's a lot of other people from that community that are looking for work. Do you think that by him shitting on this project and them getting to change the project, because if you throw seven, you know, people of that community out there into the market, his ability to get those top roles now becomes that less.
That's what I was just saying, man.
Is he big timing the industry?
I don't know if I agree with that part, though, because to me, Peter Dinklage,
I just asked the question.
You're allowed to ask the question. I'm going to respond to the question, but I don't think Peter Dinklage is not an award-winning actor because he's a little person. He's a great actor.
No, exactly. Who can
play any role.
100%.
So when he goes out for roles, he doesn't go out for roles for little people. He goes out for good roles.
The question, though, is what's his position on this? Because it obviously has to do with the fact that there are little people in this story.
It's the portrayal.
How does he know what the portrayal is, though? That's what I want to know.
I guess because there's been so much talk about a Latina lead, and there's been no talk about revitalizing.
Okay, so he's not sure how they're going to be represented.
Maybe. What if everybody, like, there's seven of them.
He had to have read this.
They all had the ability to form like Voltron.
Oh, fuck. You're going to get canceled.
Snow White and the Voltronators.
I'm just saying, like, you got to give them, like, something. You know what I mean?
You're going to do
like,
a mashup, I'm telling
boom, you. Boom! Like, Marvel. You got to Marvel this thing straight up somehow.
Yeah.
You
know? Seven dwarves jumping on top of each other to form a super dwarf.
It would be a super When are we dwarf. Getting canceled?
Like, that's, you wouldn't be a...
Probably tonight.
It's up supplies. It's taken a
while. Here's my last thought on this story before we switch gears.
Sure.
Sometimes the remake shouldn't happen.
Right.
Nobody questions the appropriateness, or at least not overly, the appropriateness of Snow White. Nobody looks at it and goes, well, why was she made as a white woman? That's not, you know, that's not inclusive. And why are there, because everyone goes, that movie was made 100 years ago.
Yeah, literally.
So nobody looks at it and goes, mm-hmm. oh my God, fuck. They just, it was made 100 years ago. If you were to remake the movie, and we joked, maybe you replace the seven dwarves with cats, or maybe you do something else. Then people, there's going to be people that are pissed that it's now a Latina woman.
Right.
So when you start to stray,
even I think that's too progressive, to be perfectly honest.
Well, we know what those people are called. We know what those people are called.
But when you start to stray too far from the source material,
right,
it's no longer that story.
It's not the story. Exactly.
Make a new story.
Yeah.
Just write a new story.
But here's the thing. Can you not tell that story with a more modern approach, still having a white Snow White and seven dwarves?
But I think if you do that, I think you just have to really reimagine. I have no problem with a Latina lead. I have no problem with whatever. I just
neither do I. But what's the I'm confused as to what the problem is with casting seven little people, as long as the story is
I'm starting to think I'm starting to think you might be right. He probably read the script.
He's got to have read this.
They probably sent it to him and he was like, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
You know?
What else could it be?
Okay. Who's the highest power if you're playing that though, right? Like, who's going to be the most prominent one out of the seven? Is it going to be Doc? Is it going to be Sleepy?
All I know is I want an audition.
You know what I mean? No.
Who's the alpha dwarf?
It's Dopey, bro.
Dopey's the king dwarf?
Dopey. Yeah, like he's the he's quiet in the shadows, like he calls the shots.
I'd like to see all new dwarves, like Stoner Dwarf and COVID Denier Dwarf.
Could you have BLM like a BLM dwarf? Like just,
I want an audition.
Mash everything, just mash all of
you got the height down.
I'm surprised you guys didn't say that from time. It's like, Dan, why don't you audition or some shows?
You're just quiet because your agent already offered you the audition.
And I'm pissed at this because I didn't get it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not just Peter too on the nose.
It's too obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too obvious. You're right.
Moving on. Speaking of canceling, there is a big pissing fight going on right now.
Some more fighting. What do you know?
I have been a fan of Joe Rogan's for many, many years. Specifically, I really liked his stand-up. I liked what he did. I liked Fear Factor. I liked what he did on News Radio when he was on that sitcom. And I absolutely loved what he did for the UFC. Mm-hmm. I've had this conversation with Tid more times than I can remember. Joe Rogan by himself. So let me rewind. Joe Rogan, in conjunction with the formation of the Ultimate Fighter reality TV show, saved the UFC.
Hmm.
They were on the brink of financial ruin. The TV show created stars.
Right.
The TV show created their highest rated network event. The TV show put them on the map, and Joe Rogan found a way as an analyst to explain what was happening to the layperson who didn't understand. When they saw two guys laying on top of each other, they're like, what the fuck is this? And right. Joe Rogan would explain, oh, he's in a butterfly guard. He's trying to move his right hip and he's trying to, and he would really, oh, he's going for a Kimura right there. He's going
to
try and
fighter needed to do to get out of it.
He was like the Joe Buck of UFC. And he was so good at it that he created new fans. The current state of Joe Rogan on his podcast is a different animal. Mm. He is so off the deep end with his COVID denying and his treatment theories and everything else. And a lot of people have been speaking out against him, a lot of celebrities. Mm-hmm. One of the big ones, and this came up in the last, I guess, couple days, Neil Young, Canadian Neil Young, has gone out and said, look, Joe Rogan is spreading a lot of misinformation. Joe Rogan is making nearly $100 million from Spotify. And Spotify needs to cancel Joe Rogan, or else Neil Young wants nothing to do with Spotify. And apparently Spotify responded by saying, okay, we're just going to take Neil Young's catalog off of Spotify. Like, you're not going to bully us. And
who's
the social media world has exploded by saying hashtag cancel Spotify. What's that?
But who's making Spotify the money? Neil Young or Joe Rogan?
Right. I was just going to say that's what it comes down to.
So that's my first thing. My second thing on this is Do we remember what Howard Stern used to be like? Mm-hmm. Do we remember, as far as you know, as much as I hate to say it, guys like an Alex Jones used to be like? Listen, Joe Rogan.
Hey, this is Alex Jones for Infowars.com. It's a spot on impression.
Brilliant. Here's the thing. Joe Rogan signed over for a very, very big contract.
Right.
Massive.
Which is it Spotify exclusive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which means that he's got to draw in an audience. And the biggest audience and the biggest thing going, which outside of, you know, the realm, because the liberal side, right, the Democrat side is still going to listen to Rogan. But also he's going to embolden himself to this other right side a little bit more, and everybody's going to create the buzz, and he's going to be constantly talked about, and he's going to get new followers by doing that. It's a formula that some guys use down there in Texas and the area that he's in, and Rogan is smart about it. He's very smart about it. He doesn't put himself in a position where he's going to fail anymore.
Are you saying that Joe Rogan's stances on COVID and COVID treatment and everything else is less about what he personally believes and more about drawing in people?
I'm saying that it could be.
Because here's the thing.
It's not out of the realm.
Rogan's podcast, it was fascinating prior to the start of the pandemic, because he would have people, he would, much like this show, he would interview people from all different walks of life and have killer long form interviews with those people. And then once all this COVID stuff started, he just went off the deep end with his thoughts and his theories and, you know, all of this other stuff. And it's like, did COVID make Joe change his style, or did going to Spotify make Joe change his style? Because both happened around the same time.
It could be a mix of both, but I'll tell you,
COVID has changed
a lot of people. COVID has created division between families, friends. I don't have to tell you guys, like, it's really crazy the stances that people take. What I find interesting about this, though, is he has a medium, which is a podcast much like this, and we get to say whatever the hell we want. And I've come to an understanding that I might not agree with what somebody says, but I have the ability to tune out. I don't tune in. But I do want to ask you guys a question about this, because I did see a clip of the Joe Rogan Experience where he was interviewing Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And one of the points that he was making very strongly, and he wouldn't let the doctor get out of it, was why CNN, quote, lied about Rogan's taking of a, quote, horse dewormer. Because ivermectin has been spoken about as a drug, a veterinary drug. But in fact, on that podcast, and Dr. Gupta agreed with him that it is generally prescribed for humans. So how wrong is what Joe Rogan is what Joe Rogan is saying? He went on to talk about the differences between California and Florida and the two different policies that the states have in tackling COVID, and how Florida is doing, quote, better than California, in spite of California being more locked down versus Florida being completely open and massive.
Florida's not doing better. Florida, about a year
ago. So is Joe Rogan straight lying?
Well, it's interpretation of things.
Okay.
Florida, about a year ago, stopped counting.
Okay.
Like, a lot of people got COVID. We're just going to stop counting. It's kind of like what Ontario did about a month ago.
Yeah, recently. Yeah.
Where they said, we're going to stop counting daily cases and we're going to monitor hospitalizations.
Right.
Florida's not monitoring hospitalizations or numbers. They're just like, fuck it, live your life. Everyone go do your thing. If you die.
But how are things going? Are they keeping records? But are they keeping records of COVID-related deaths, hospitalizations, cases? And is ivermectin a drug that humans are prescribed?
What I know is this about ivermectin.
Okay.
Because I've done a lot of research on this. I even did research on this while I was home convalescing from COVID.
Right.
And I had a lot of free time.
Yeah.
There have been a ton of studies done on the effects of ivermectin with treating COVID. Okay. There are no conclusive results that show it benefits in any way, shape, or form.
Right. I think
the 100%
placebo. Not that I would take a drug. I'm generally anti-drug. I want to ask for clarification. Sure. If either of you boys know this, is that because Rogan's position on this particular clip with I see Dr. Gupta on CNN all the time. So he's challenging him to say, why has CNN lied? So the question here is Neil Young's position on Spotify because of the so-called lies or disinformation that Joe Rogan is sending out. Meanwhile, in this particular clip, he's talking about the lies that CNN are sending out by way of calling ivermectin a horse dewormer when in fact it's a medication for humans.
Okay,
whether
so
it
I just
cures
did a
COVID or not is
okay, so I just
he's
did
talking
a
about the way it's Hold on. Position. You understand?
Here's why. You do a quick Google of ivermectin, and the first thing that comes up when you Google ivermectin, this is from April 26, 2021. First thing that pops up, ivermectin is FDA approved for use in animals for prevention of heartworm disease.
Okay.
That's the first thing that pops up.
Right.
So CNN 100%. Didn't lie. They Googled.
Hold on. Here's the thing. 100%.
Which is and what a lot of people
on both
do.
Sides. Here's the thing on both sides. Ivermectin has been used, right, in a different form, just like codeine can put into a different form to be able to use between animals and humans. That is a fact, no doubt about it.
Okay.
Here's the thing. He did not just take ivermectin and it's all went away. It was ivermectin. It was monoclonal.
He did mention
it was a drip. It was all of this. It was this. It was this. It was this. It was 7-8 different things.
Jeez. Yeah.
Who can afford it? First of all, number one, not a lot of people. We're talking about a guy who became an instant millionaire, multimillionaire from his deal with Spotify. Kudos to him. Fucking great, right?
Yeah.
We all wish we could do that, right? But he can afford those things. Not everybody can. So instead of taking these 8 different things to do so, this opportunity has been given to everybody to do so to get things back on track. And that is called the vaccine.
Mm.
Not everybody can afford to do that route, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to do all of those things as opposed to one thing.
Do you guys?
Yeah, I think it opens up the door for so many other things to go wrong.
Do you know enough about Rogan's podcast to agree with Neil Young and that what he's doing is disseminating disinformation that is harmful to the public? I don't know enough of the podcast.
I don't listen to
say
the,
that.
I don't listen to the JRE as much as I used to, but I do catch clips on YouTube every now and then, and he does spread a lot of opinion that he states as fact. And he will state things that he says are fact that when you look
them
up,
factual.
You're not seeing them as verified.
He believes them to be fact to himself, and he has millions, 11 million listeners at any given time. So
if he's sharing opinion, though, that's different than stating something as fact that is not fact. And if that's what he's doing, there's
but who takes it as fact?
Well, remember, they just had a president that told him to take bleach and
So you're talking about
facts don't matter to people.
Whatever
they believe is all that matters.
When you're talking about the anti-vax community, one of my favorite questions to say to people when they challenge me on things is they're like, oh, you believe the news? I'm like, what's your source of information that you trust?
Mm-hmm.
And then they tell me and they send me links and they make me look at shit, and their links and their sources is a YouTube video by some unknown person, a screenshot from a chat group on Telegram where it's a bunch of other anti-vaxxers all telling each other, I agree with you.
Right.
Or, you know, something of that sort. And I'm like, these are not verified sources of information.
Right. Right.
So essentially what happens is you have a group of people. And it's not just anti-vaxxers. It's anyone that's radical about their ideology. You have a group of people that are so in love with their opinions that anytime someone echoes what they believe, that becomes fact to them.
Right.
And they will stand on a pedestal and say,
that's their
look,
research.
That guy agrees with me.
Yeah. And that's what people call research. They go and find someone who already agrees with them to back up the story they've already been spitting out there, and they've done their research.
And that's it. That's all it takes. Okay, let's switch gears. Very quickly, I want to touch on this. I don't want to go into too much detail on it, but we talked about Strombolopoulos. He did a broadcast a couple nights ago, and it was hysterical. He got into a huge thing on his live with a couple of hardcore anti-vaxxers, and they were talking about the truck rally, right? We know all about the convoy. Truckers that are being forced to be vaccinated in order to, you know, support supply chains and all that sort of thing. And there was all these people talking to Strombo going, you know, hey, we're not going to let the government stop our freedom. And then George jumped all over them and said, listen, man, I'm 100% in favor of protest. You protest right. whatever you want. What I'm not going to support is false narratives. This is not a fight for freedom. If this is about freedom, then all those people who are claiming that they are fighting for freedom, they would not be the same people saying ban abortions. They would not be the same people that are saying BLM is a terrorist group.
There you go.
They would also be fighting for LGBTQ rights. Right. They would not be angry when you have trans people using washrooms that match their chosen gender.
Yeah. They would not downplay critical race theory.
If you're a freedom fighter, and all you're a freedom fighter.
That's right.
This isn't about freedom. It's about convenience. Yes. It's about I'm being inconvenienced right now and I don't like it. That's what it's about. So those of you that went out today to the trucker rallies and you held up your signs and said, freedom, freedom. It's not about freedom. And you need to stop lying to yourselves. It's not about freedom.
I support the truckers. I support the truckers every single day that are out there doing their jobs. This is not about out there doing your job. This is about throwing a temper tantrum for somebody else's needs, and that somebody else is the people that organize this. You are being fucking grifted by them. Everybody who is supported to this thing is being grifted. I understand the need to go out and protest. Everybody has that right, but this is not what you do to do so. So, I mean, listen, if you think so, cool, great. I don't know what you think is going to happen other than the fact that you're going to have to just turn around and go home once you get to Ottawa to do this, to argue about the things that the states already has in place as well. This is all a money grab, in my opinion, by the wrong people supporting the wrong causes.
We just got a text message in 437-375-2000. Hey, Tid, every now and then I like to listen to your Wrestlers Talking Football podcast on Twitch. I did not listen this week or last week. My Packers are eliminated. Who's going to win the Super Bowl?
I think it's going to come down to the best two teams. I think you're going to see a second year of a home team in the LA Rams there. And I think you're going to see the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl in a home. I don't think you see the 49ers beat the Rams, because if the 49ers beat the Rams, there's no way in hell they can go back to that stadium 2 weeks later and try to perform. Oh, my God. Could you imagine that? It's not going to happen. It's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. It's going to be Kansas City Chiefs and the LA Rams. And I think that it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs who come out on top.
Well, I got to stick by my Niners. I got to stick by my Niners. And I was not sure that they were going to be able to win last week, and they did. And that defense that they have is championship level. That is a championship level defense.
Yes. 100%. They are on par. After last week's football,
last week's football
could have been a Super Bowl any game. Last week's football could have been a Super Bowl.
Oh my God. Poor Buffalo Bills fans. They are just a cursed group of people, eh? They got a quarterback.
Don't let them score.
They got a quarterback that 2 weeks in a row, 2 weeks ago, he played literally a perfect game, right? They scored a major on every single possession. I don't think that's ever been done before in NFL history, right? And last week, he has a great game, and they can't fucking win. Like, poor Bills fans. I feel so bad for them. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now for the big hello and time for our featured guest. I first became aware of this man's existence when his father, Canadian broadcast icon Master T, introduced him to aforementioned friend George Strombolopoulos. And Strombo told me, man, you got to see how cute Tony's damn kid is. Contrary to popular belief, this man's mama is not a keyboard. His name popped up again on my radar many, many years later because, as many members of our audience know, I was a basketball coach for more than 20 years, and this dude ended up at the premier prep school in Canada, the Athletic Institute in Orangeville. In 2016, he competed in the BioSteel game, which is an all-star showcase of Canada's top high school players. He won co-MVP, an award that's been earned by current NBA stars Lou Dort and Jamal Murray. As he was wrapping up his time at AI, he received scholarship offers from majors like St. Bonnie, Marquette, Loyola Marymount, Alabama, Pittsburgh, and Vanderbilt before committing and having a four-year career at Providence. In 2020, he made the jump from amateur to pro and kicked off his career playing for Bornova in Turkey. Later that year, he also signed with the Hamilton Honey Badgers, my favorite name in all of pro sports, and he led the team in field goal percentage. Just before the holidays this year, he wore the red and white and repped Team Canada at the FIBA World Cup qualifiers. He was part of a team that had vets like Anthony Bennett, Kyle Wilcher, and the Scrub Boys, and so many others. They went undefeated in group play, including an exciting slap of the Bahamas. Fast forward to current day. When he's not dissecting TikTok videos with his brother, he's busy playing for a team in Poland whose name is so fucking hard to pronounce, I dare not try. He's the team's second leading rebounder. They were supposed to play tonight, but the game was postponed due to the virus. So he's here, well-rested, and ready to go. Ladies and gentlemen, at power forward from Providence by way of Toronto, Ontario, 6'9", 255 pounds, coming to us live from Poland, number 13, Khalif Young.
Thank you for that introduction. I'm happy to be on the show with Khalif? You guys.
We're happy to have you. And I'm happy that Donnie didn't rap his way through that introduction and gave you the proper basketball announcement.
Hey, why don't you shut up? Maybe I'll freestyle still. Don't try me. I might drop a few bars for Khalif.
Oh, God.
How you
What's
doing,
good, Khalif? I'm good. Just hanging out. Just chilling. Get ready for the game tomorrow.
Could I ask you a favor and so we can show respect to the team? Can you pronounce it since Donnie can't?
It's honestly not that hard. It's just the way it's spelt makes it kind of sound a little bit difficult, but it's okay. Really just it's Charney. That's it, Charney.
Charney. Donnie, you couldn't do Charney? It rhymes with you.
Yo, bro. How is it spelled, bro?
Spelled C-Z-A-R-N-I. So you're thinking
you would have come
Cesarney
up with Charney?
Or Charney, yeah. Or that's what I thought too, but no, it's Charney, and it's all the different letters and everything. It's all different over here.
Thank you, sir. How's your Polish?
It's smooth. I know all the swear words.
Of course.
It's always the first thing everybody
no
learns.
Doubt, right? You learn. I know all the swear words. I know hello, all the basics. I know the basics pretty much. But
what's your favorite Polish swear word?
Oh, I can't. I don't know. Can I do that? Like kurwa mać is like, that's a big one. Kurwa mać. That's a strong one right there. It's a strong one, but
now when you went over there, when you first got there and you to learn, you know, like the swear words, was it more because you wanted to like be able to fucking spit some shit, or was it more because you wanted to know if somebody was talking shit about you when they were around you?
More the second one, honestly, because I think that you found that, like, when you found, especially here, like, that one I just said is very common. Like, they say that, like, I'm annoyed, I'm happy. It's just, it's very, it's like the F word, I guess,
and you'll hear it on the court a lot.
You hear it there, you hear it, I missed a shot, cool, you hear it all around, so it's very popular.
That's so funny.
That'll be good, because when you get in the NBA, you'll be able to cuss everybody in the league without them knowing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm two countries deep so far, so we're two levels of swear words in.
Very cool.
I think we're learning the world a little bit.
That's amazing.
That's good,
man.
That's a great benefit.
I love it because, you know, in my time as a basketball coach working with young prep stars who had an opportunity to play professionally, first of all, I always said to them, look, use basketball to get a free education. First and foremost, right? And then you get that free education. Once that's on lock, if you have an opportunity to get paid to play the game you love, you play overseas, you play locally in Canada, or you play in the league, which is the highest of the high, man, whatever it is, you're getting paid money for the children's game. And that is a dream. And that is, and you're living it, man. You are living the dream. You're playing professional basketball. Do you ever just wake up and pinch yourself and go, holy shit, this thing I used to do in the driveway just for fun, I'm getting a check for this.
No, I think that the more you kind of go along, you kind of realize it more. I think I'm still in the habit because I'm only 2 years out of college where I still check my backpack and see if there's homework I got to do in it.
Yeah.
So like there's the little things where you're kind of like, you're still used to like doing this going along with the side of the schoolwork and everything else that comes along with it because you're used to doing this as a collegiate student or as a high school student or as middle school, and you've done it, you've kind of known them as a tandem. But now as I get older, I think you kind of realize like you're getting paid for this. And I think it's cool in one aspect, but it's also, it's a lot different because again, you're across the world, you're away from family, you're yeah. alone, and you kind of, you start to, you learn a lot about yourself and a lot about just like what you can handle, what you can kind of take in. Because again, the thing about this level of basketball is that if you're not producing, they are quick to get rid of you. No matter where you are, how much the flight costs, they will get rid of you and right. bring someone else in. So
yeah,
you got to always be on your P's and Q's. You're
always working to keep that job.
What's the
job for sure?
What's the practice cadence like for you out there in Poland? Is it? Mm-hmm. I'm like at Providence. I'm guessing you guys are doing mm-hmm. a lot of two-a-days and stuff like that.
I think like a lot of times, especially even college, I guess like the summers are a lot of two-a-days, okay. a lot of the hard, they kill you in the summer. And then once you get mm-hmm. to the season, they kind of calm down. But especially with this level here, a lot of times we only play once a week. So
right.
a lot of times what happens is we have about two-a-days a week. So we'll have it like, but normally it's like we lift and we'll shoot in the morning, come mm-hmm. back, and then we'll have a regular practice. So It's some teams where you're in a situation where the coach is just, it's an old school coach. We're going to 2 days the entire season. I don't care how your body feels. I don't care what you're saying. It's just like, you got to produce. And I want to make sure that you know everything you need to know. So
but I'll let the guys cool jump in. Coach. I'm going to let the guys jump in, but I got to ask another question about coaching and mm-hmm. practices. Cause I'm just so intrigued by that. Right. Mm-hmm. And anytime I talk to people playing overseas, I ask this question for my own knowledge. So mm-hmm. are your practices primarily more skill and development based, or would you say they're situational things? Like, all right, we're going to work on, you know, a particular action that we might use mm-hmm. if we're down late in the game, or is it a lot of free flowing scrimmages?
It's a mix of it all kind of, okay. cause we have days where it's like, okay, we're going to focus on skills and we're going to focus on how we're going to guard pick and rolls.
Sure.
So we'll have a day like that, and we'll have a part of the practice where it's just let's focus on that. And then we'll have a part of the practice where it's like, okay, we're going to have free flowing 5-on-5 with some of the other team's plays. So they're going to, he's going to show us their play. Right. We're going to kind of go through some of their stuff, balance it out, and then mimic their stuff as well as we can. And then obviously we're going to guard it and make sure that we can defend it. So it's a balance of a bunch of different things, but it keeps us on our toes. Obviously if you have a good coach who kind of mixes it up and kind of allows you to, the freedom to kind of, so you're not always kind of doing the same thing. It's a positive situation. No.
Is it like the NBA where you guys will have 4 or 5 different coverages on ball screens and pick and roll plays, or do you have like 1 or 2 things that you pretty much run with?
It all depends on the coach, honestly. I think like last
for you, for you guys right now.
Oh, personally, we have about, let's say like three or four different ball screen coverages.
Okay.
I think it all depends on how diverse, like, the person who's guarding the pick and roll is. I think that like with the sure. person that obviously a lot of times I'm guarding the pick and roll. So again, like I'm able to switch to a guard and guard a guard. So that's easier for me to do that. But we have other players who it's better to have a drop coverage. And then, so there's other things yeah. where you kind of have to, it's all predicated off of who's kind of guarding it really.
Hmm. And who's got the ball.
Yes, of course.
The scouting report on that guy. Sorry, mm-hmm. I'll let one of the other guys jump in because I'm just nerding here on inside yeah. basketball stuff.
Well, I'm nerding a little bit too. And for obvious reasons, I need to shift the conversation a little bit to music and family. You obviously mentioned okay, your family. Okay. Now, everybody knows your father is a legend. Mm-hmm. I personally am indebted to him for having him help launch my career. Without your dad, I don't get to have literally any exposure to a Canadian base for my music. I don't get the type of notoriety that no one is getting today because of there's a change towards social media versus when television broadcast was the place where you consumed a lot of new music videos, etc. There's a lot of questions I want to ask you, but I guess the first is, was there any pressure in your world to follow, not in his footsteps specifically as a broadcast legend, but mm-hmm. to make a name for yourself and to be like, I gotta be somebody because my dad is Master T? Or did you get a support that pushed you in that direction? Was it easier for you having a celebrity dad?
I think it was a balance. I think as a young kid, I think having a dad who's obviously has a level of notoriety in Canada, and especially at a time when I was as young, he was at some of the height of his, some of what he was doing. So I think that was tough, I guess, when you're young, because as a child, your dad's always getting taken away because someone wants to meet with him, one wants to see him. that part was tough. But then as you get older, I think I really allowed it, he never really pressured any, like, me or my brother. Like, it was just kind of allowing us to do whatever we wanted to do, I think.
Right.
If anything, it wasn't even about broadcast or anything along those lines. He wanted me and my brother to play soccer first. So okay. He was the coach of my soccer team when I was a kid, and we did that, and that was a big part of kind of my first intro into sports. And then once it became basketball, I just kind of stayed in that direction since I was probably about 10. So, but no pressure on that level. It was just always kind of go have fun with it. Go obviously do your best, and the support has always been there from him, my grandma, my mom, everybody in my family. So I can't complain on that part.
I remember working with current NBA star who may very well be an all-star this year, Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. When Andrew was a seventh, eighth grader, somewhere around mm-hmm. there, and he wasn't known yet. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, he had some game, but he wasn't known. But when he would go to tournaments and stuff, his dad, Mitch, would go with mm-hmm. him, and Mitchell Wiggins played in the NBA.
Yeah.
Everywhere they'd go, even if you didn't know Mitchell Wiggins, you saw this mm-hmm. big, muscular looking brick wall of a man. And you're like, that guy's somebody. And he drew a mm-hmm. crowd every mm-hmm. game he attended. And you could see Andrew's face like, Dad, go home, man. Mm. Like, did you ever have those moments? Like, your dad's coming to the game and everyone's like, yo, it's Master T. And then it's like, man, can anybody watch me?
Right.
No, I think as a young kid, I don't think I really ever had those issues. I think I was playing in those young leagues. I don't think you kind of focused on that at that point. But I mean, once you get older and kind of shifted towards what I was doing. I mean, once I got older, I played at high level. I started to play at higher levels. I played for like Team Ontario and Team Canada when I was younger as well. So I started to kind of branch out and kind of create my own level of a resume in terms of basketball wise when I was young. So that was a big step for me, and just kind of allowing me to have my own level of a path. And again, like, plus also being 6'9", you draw a crowd to begin with. So that part kind of shifted. Yeah,
you're a 6'9" brother in Poland.
That is a sentence you don't hear a lot.
Seriously.
Which begs the question, which begs a separate question. Let me tell you this. At around midnight last night, I posted a promo for tonight's show on Instagram mm-hmm. up on my story. Khalif Young going to be joining us tonight. Bro, I got to tell you something. The number of ladies that responded to that post with a fire emoji and hard eyes and all this stuff. And I'm like, yo, are you a fan of Khalif? No, but that's a good looking brother. Like, I got a lot of responses like that. So if that's what I'm getting, if that's what I'm getting, your DMs must be insane.
I try to keep the straight and narrow. Focus on the basketball, focus on what I got to do. And that's my focus right
good
now.
Good answer.
So you mentioned that, and it's got, I imagine it's got to be tough. And what has mm-hmm. been the toughest thing, especially playing in another country? Like, how's the mm-hmm. dieting been? You know what I mean? And be able to get, like, you go over there, clearly nutrition and food and everything mm-hmm. is a little bit different. It's got to be some mm-hmm. crazy stuff that you're not used to so much. Like, was that a thing going, you know what I mean, when you first showed up there? And how's it working out for you now?
I think that, again, like, I've always been a bigger guy. Like, I think just even from, like, when I went to college, like, I struggled with, obviously, my first thing was I struggled with kind of balancing that level of, okay, I'm away from home and there's food everywhere that I can eat. So, like, nobody's telling me I can't eat it. Nobody's telling me I can't do it. So I went that direction. So I went full that direction. And after that year, I came back and realized I'm way too heavy, and I reeled it in and kind of balanced it out, and kind of now, being now about 24, I'm at a point where now I've realized a little bit more about what my body can do and how my body reacts to certain foods and how much food I have to kind of intake to make sure that I can perform at a certain level as well, because that's a huge part of obviously my job. Again, my body is my job, which is something that people don't realize when they say, okay, mm-hmm. you're just traveling the world and you're having fun and it's amazing. And it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, but there's so many other factors that go into
That's all day off shit that they're talking about.
And that's the thing. You get one day off and you want to rest. So the chances of you really going to travel somewhere in the less than 24 hours that you have is very slim a lot of times. So that's the part where people don't see that part. They see the part where it's, oh my God, you're across the world, and that's exciting. But
Dan, yeah, I know you want to jump in, but I got to say this one comment just to follow up on something Khalif just said. You talk about that, and I think you look at professional sports fans, NBA in particular, let's keep it basketball, and they always make comments like, you know, oh, why does our team suck when they go on the road? Or why are they having trouble on the road? Oh, they only play well at home because that's when they have the fans to cheer them on. Yeah, the fans cheering you on is nice, but what people tend to forget is these guys travel. They sometimes arrive at the city they're going to at 4 o'clock in the morning. They don't get a good sleep. They're not eating food from their normal outlets of food. They're not in their own bed. They're probably jet lagged. You know, they might have had their luggage lost. They might have got a text from the wife back home going, you know, you forgot to take the garbage out, asshole. And now they're stressed because they can't go hug their wife because, you know, they're on the road. They got problems galore when they're on the road. And now they got to go banged up, sore, whatever, play a game, get on a plane, go do it again. Like, I think people forget that part. They think of it like they're playing 2K and it's just like, oh, it's just another day, right? They
forgot the most important part. You forgot the most important part, though. It's a bunch of motherfucking giants. These are giants that are doing this. You know what I mean? Like trying to travel around with normal sized people as a fucking
That's
giant true. In itself is a task, man.
I mean, they're you flying charters. So in charters, you're going to have a little more leg room. But yeah.
At that level, yeah, no. Yeah. They're definitely flying charters at that level. No.
Yeah.
I think that, people obviously they glorify a lot of what the basketball world is when you come overseas, but they don't realize how big the basketball world is overseas. Yeah. Like there's so many levels to it. And I think that obviously I've been lucky enough to be at two pretty solid levels to start off. I wasn't at like the slums of the slums. I know places, guys that have gone places where they are in the middle of nowhere and they have no level of transportation, no level of support, no level of anything. And they ask questions, and they're not getting paid on time, and they're asking GMs who are ducking them for money, and there's the amount of horror stories I've heard of just in the couple of years that I've already started playing basketball, it's unreal. But I think that I've been lucky enough, I guess, like to be in good situations, and I credit my agent and the situation, people around me that have helped me get those opportunities. But I think that my biggest thing was just you kind of like I think what a big part of it was is just the travel is a lot though. The travel is a lot. And I think when the outside world and those fans kind of, they see you as like, you're untouchable and that you're like, they can just say whatever they want and they can feel that they feel that they can have their way with you on the internet because they can. And I guess they hide behind these screens, they hide behind all these different things, but they don't see what goes into a week of what we have to do or preparation. Or then, okay, it's like, okay, we practiced last night. Okay. Wake up at 7 in the morning this morning, travel 7 hours across Poland in a bus on an air mattress blown up on the back of a bus, and then now you check in a hotel, you have practice after once like an hour after you get here, you rest, you eat, and then you play tomorrow. So like nobody's factoring all that in between time of what you did or how you got there. So it's like, okay, he's on the court now, so he's
right,
whatever he did on this court right now is like that's how they're gonna know.
Yeah, I turn on my channel and he's there, so whatever. Go ahead, Dan. So I'm sorry to cut you off.
Well, speaking of all that, Khalif, you know, there's a video that was going viral over the past week of, I believe, a basketball team on a bus in China. I believe it was. And did you see the video? Yes, exactly. Thank you. And they were hollering the N-word at him. And I mean, it's not like you need to travel to experience racism, but I'm just curious to know if you've encountered anything like that out there, and what is the culture shock for you? How have you been able to, like, you know, assimilate?
I think that the more you travel the world, the more that you see the world, you realize how lucky and blessed you are to be in Canada sometimes, because you're in a place that's a melting pot of so many different countries. It's like I was talking to my teammate, actually I think it was like 2 days ago, and we were saying like, I have yet to see a Polish Chinese person, a Chinese Polish person, or an Indian Polish person, or any of these things. These things just don't happen. Like, you're not going to walk the streets or go to a mall and you're going to see an array of people, which is something that you're not used to. It's like, I think even in the last 2 years, I said, like, I was in Turkey last year. You go to the mall, you're seeing Turkish people, and that's not okay. I'm Canadian and I'm black and this is that, and I can say this, but like, You going there, you're seeing one type of people.
Right.
Everyone is a, it's not to be disrespectful or anything. It's a level of, it's
what it
it's
is.
A culture, and it's a culture, and it's a very strong culture. And you're not, it's not much of a disarray from where you're going to see, like, okay, it's here. Here's some people that look a little bit different. Here's people that look slightly different here. It's like, it's very much a similar situation. So again, here, it's the same thing, because go to the mall and you see people and you, they stare, and it's like, you have to understand, it's like, you have to kind of take off that level of, like, when you're at home and someone stares at you, you're like, what are you staring at?
Right.
What's the issue? You got a problem? Like, what's the problem here?
Right.
But like here, you have to understand, it's like, they're staring because it's an anomaly. Mm-hmm. It's not a common thing. It's not a level of disrespect. It's like, it's just not,
okay.
It's not something they're used to, or they're not really thinking. It's not even a level of like, oh, they dislike you or have a problem with you. A lot of people, it's just kind of, it's different. And whenever
you, so that's good. So you haven't been verbally accosted.
No, I've never been. I've never had those issues with verbal accosting. Have I had people DM me and say all types of things when I'm missing free throws and all this and all that? Yeah, of course.
Right.
But that's just part of the game.
Right. Okay.
I don't think he's. I mean, listen, there may be some racist ass out there, but let's not forget the brother 6'9", 255. Like, you know, if they are saying it, it's not within earshot.
No, it's never within earshot. It's never right in your face.
Yeah, good, it's good. The covert stuff. Luckily, you have to beware of, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Khalif, we have a few text messages that just came in from listeners. You mind if I ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah, all good. All
from
good.
The audience? Okay, there's one here. He signed his name, Jays Like Wata. It says, yo, man, they used to say the big difference with ball in Europe was softer bigs and all shot threes. Now bigs in the league shooting threes like nothing. And at FIBA, the Euro teams beat the shit out of Americans on boards, man. So what's really real?
I think that the more you get used to playing overseas and you start to realize is that the Euro leagues and the high leagues overseas, the difference in the levels of how people play, it's like the role players in the NBA a lot of times are the difference between them and a Euro league player isn't a huge gap. Mm. Because of the fact that you're having a lot of these guys come over here because they realize there's about the same amount of money in some of these places as a role player, and it's untaxed. And it's a situation where you're in a good situation and you're the man on your team over here, it's an ego thing as well. Like would you want to go and be in Spain living the life and you're the man on your team, or go to the NBA and be the last guy always wondering if you're gonna get cut? What is that? What mindset is that for you? So I think this people understand, like, even there's a guy, Mike James, who played in he played EuroLeague and he played for like a huge team over here.
Yeah.
Making like $3 million plus, whatever. And then he comes and he signed with the Brooklyn Nets for the end of the last season. And he goes there. And again, he's a role player. He's a solid player, but he's known over here as Mike James. He's known across the world as that. So it's the level isn't a crazy difference. I think people kind of have to realize that there's good basketball players at all these levels. It's not like you're just dealing with like the NBA and that's the only kind of the view for a lot of these kids. But like once you get to a certain point, you realize that the overseas can be very lucrative and very, you can make a very successful career over here doing this.
I think one thing too people tend to forget is like when you look at a college team, every guy from number one to number 12, every guy on that roster is a legend at his high school. A legend.
Very true.
And then when you look at an NBA team, every guy, even the 15th man that never dresses, is a legend at his college.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's an icon at his college. And then people are like, oh, this guy's a scrub. This guy sucks. And it's like, man.
Yeah, they have no idea.
It's so much just about opportunity.
Like, you wouldn't select them if you were playing pickup.
Yeah.
And that's like, the thing. Like,
you know you would.
You ever understand that.
You ever seen those videos on YouTube of, what's his name? White Mamba. Brian Scalabrine.
That's what I was going to say. The quote he said about how he was like, he said that I'm closer to LeBron than you are to me. It's very true, because these guys realize that like he was a long guy. I don't care what you want to say, if the dude averaged 4 points for over a 10-year span, he was in the NBA for 10 years. I don't care what you want to tell me. The dude was on the team for a reason. I don't care who signed him. He kept getting signed for a reason. So he was doing something right. So
And there's videos on YouTube. There's videos on YouTube of him like what, 5 years after retirement, he's out of shape. And he's playing against young college D1 players, and he's housing them. He's absolutely destroying them. Another question here. This one is from, I know this dude. This is Young Sheezy. I'm currently a high school baller in Toronto. I'm in grade 10. Mm-hmm. Donnie used to be one of my prep coaches. I'm being recruited right now by big prep schools in the States, but I'm a mm-hmm. small guard and I'm worried. Mm-hmm. Will they just recruit over me and I'm going to get lost in the pile? Any advice? You're probably a good person to ask this to because mm-hmm. you're a star prospect. But you went to some big programs that are loaded mm-hmm. with talent, right?
And I definitely did. Yeah. I went to a situation where I went to my first year at Orangeville Prep. I had the entire team went D1, which is something that you never
insane.
Hear. Like 1 through 12 went D1, which was a crazy situation.
Mm. It's insane when you think about that. But if you would, because you started at Oakwood, right?
Mm-hmm. I started at Oakwood, went to Vaughan, and then went there for 2 years.
So hypothetically, like of those three programs, Oakwood, Vaughan, mm-hmm. and AI, Oakwood mm-hmm. would be considered the smallest school in the provincial region of schools, yeah, right?
For sure.
Of those three, Oakwood's still a great mm-hmm. basketball school. If you had stayed
the history Oakwood, is huge. Yeah.
The history is amazing. If you had stayed at Oakwood, you would have been the man. Mm-hmm. Like
no,
the
no doubt
man.
About that. And that was very evident from a young age. Obviously, even the way that they had brought me up, I was on the senior team for them as a grade 10. So I was already, and grade 9 was going to get pulled up too. So it was a level of, they were already looking at me as that next guy to go there. But obviously things changed and moved along those ways. But no, it was that when you stay there, it's different.
So what's your advice for Sheezy, man? Is it better to be the man on a smaller scale team? Because everyone gets exposure nowadays. Like if you can ball, mm-hmm. they're going to find you, right? It's not like the old mm-hmm. days where you have to go somewhere to get noticed. If you can hoop, they're going to find you. But would you say follow in your footsteps, go mm-hmm. to as big a program as you can so that you're in those biggest tournaments, even though you might have to fight for burn? Or would you say, man, just go where they're going to play you the most?
I think that, for me, I think there's a balance to it, because I think there's one thing, it's kind of how you want to, it's kind of the personal experience, the personal choice, because in one part of it, if you stay at a small school and you decide that, hey, I'm going to be the man, I'm going to make sure that people come, they're going to come to see me. And that's the view you have to take. If you're going to come and you're at a small school and you have a team that maybe isn't the strongest, you're going to have to say that I'm the show and I have to make sure that I'm performing and showing out at all levels. But if you go to a big school, people don't realize a lot of times these big schools have, if you have a bunch of prospects on a team, coaches will come and watch practice. They won't come just to games and things like this. They'll come to watch practice. So they'll see you competing. And I knew guys on my team that got signed off of practice, guys that played a total of maybe 5 minutes the entire season, but went mid-major, which shows that level of how like competing in practice. And if a coach is seeing you, they're going to see you in that respect too. So I think that if you believe that you can play and hoop at those high levels, I'm all for it. But if you want to also say that, take the route of I'm going to be the man on my team and I'm going to have people come see me, that's another route you can choose, and it's not a wrong choice.
There's another question that came in, and this one, the person did not put their name. It said, hey, Khalif, what did it mean to you to play for Team Canada? What was Anthony Bennett like? Has he gotten better?
Team Canada is always an amazing experience. I think that the biggest thing for me too was like it was a kind of a eye opener and a level of just kind of seeing a lot of guys that I grew up with, and I think guys that I looked up to and guys that obviously I grew up with too, because I played with Kyle Alexander again, who I played in Orangeville with. Mm. I played with a couple guys that I still have known growing up, and then you see these other guys that I've looked up to since I was younger too. So Anthony Bennett is an amazing guy, honestly, like great, great guy. Honestly, I can't say anything bad about that guy. And he's super talented. I will always say that he got the worst end of the stick and how he kind of got into the NBA and what happened there. Mm. But no, that the guy is super talented, and he's also a great guy to begin with. So but nothing bad to say on that part.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I met Anthony once, and I felt like from his rookie season, that kid was cursed, because he didn't tell anyone to draft him first overall.
No.
You know, that was a mistake. He was not a first overall prospect. And then when you get drafted first overall, they look at you like, oh, right, you're the next LeBron James.
Right.
And I think he came into his first camp a little out of shape. And then all of a sudden, the media was just like, bust before he stepped on the court.
It's crazy because you got to think, like, the dude was, for the first couple of years or so, or a couple of years, he was hurt. He had a foot injury on top of it. Like, people don't realize that, like, when you're also, when you have all this pressure on you, and on top of it, now you have to perform at a certain level, and you're hurt on top of that. Because there's guys, like, why don't you want to sit and see, okay, oh, only Kobe had all these injuries and played through it, and he was such a gladiator. Like, 90% of the NBA has something hurting, aching, sore, torn, like, that nobody is really reporting. But it's a part of the everyday life, and I think that you have to understand that, like, if the dude was hindered by an injury on top of the fact that, hey, maybe he's not practicing 4 or 5 times a week because he can't practice, and they're making him play just the games. Like, you know, those are the things you don't see, again, which is what you, the behind-the-scenes things are, things that don't kind of get broadcasted. So, but no, I think he definitely was got put in a situation where your first pick, no matter what, you're going to have a spotlight on you. People tried to say that Wiggins was a bust and the dude was averaging 20 and whatever. And like, it's like, how are you going to say he's a – just because he's not – but he wasn't – he wasn't the Kobe that we thought he was going to be when he came out. He wasn't this. It's like, it's just like being a good player in the NBA and lasting a long time is still, you still should be credited for that and not disrespected for who you do.
And so much of it is opportunity, right? Like, former guest on this show, Etan Thomas, when I interviewed him previously, he was saying the summer that Kwame Brown was drafted, he was having one-on-ones against guys like Tim Duncan and David Robinson and you know, like, all these other superstar bigs, and he was destroying them one-on-one, and they were all looking at Kwame like, this guy is going to be an all-star as a rookie. And the Washington Wizards just broke him. They broke his confidence. They absolutely ate him alive. Doug Collins and Michael Jordan combined to ruin that kid. And, you know, I love Jordan, but sometimes tough love isn't right love. We got to wrap up, my man. But before we go, we had one last question. This one's from Tina. It said, in the intro, says you love TikTok. Any favorite TikTokers?
I'm not good with the names. I'm terrible with the names.
Are you an island boy?
No, not island boy. I'm all about the funny videos that keep me obsessed.
Cabby.
It's a good way to get distracted because, again, like I said, being overseas is a good way to connect with my family as well. I think my little brother especially, because we both watch. We both kind of can do that, and he'll send me his. We'll send it, and I'll call him every kind of couple of days, and we'll kind of recap whatever 20 or so videos, and we'll just watch them together and hang out and just chill. So it's a good way to do that, which is nice. So
right on, well, man.
Khalif, man, before we go, I got to tell you, man, you are an articulate, intelligent dude with clearly a lot of talent, and you come from royalty. Thank you for doing the show, and please continue to progress and be the superstar you are. You're an inspiration too. I know a lot of kids playing ball out here and doing their thing, and congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir. Hey, Khalif, we'll check in with you again, okay, after the season's over.
All right, man. For sure. Yeah,
talk some NBA or something. All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, Khalif Young, yes, everybody. He is, as Daniel says, Canadian royalty after all.
Unquestionably, and I'm super impressed by just, you know, his countenance and his style. He was obviously brought up like the king, the young king that he is. And it's great to see a perspective that isn't all about, like, you know, glitz, glamour and money and fame. He's obviously focused on what it is he's doing. And he's very grounded, knowing that he may have a career that's just based in Europe. It sounded to me like if that's the case, he's happy knowing. As you put it out there, he's getting paid to play basketball, and he obviously has got his head screwed on right. So much, much respect to him, and a super huge shout out to his parents for obviously raising this young king right, man. I'm looking forward to seeing his success continue to grow.
Final thoughts, gentlemen, as we wrap up episode 86.
That was mine.
Ted?
Yeah, we are getting closer to Super Bowl. I'm super excited about that. It's going to be pretty good. It actually falls on a pretty dope weekend because you get like the Saturday night. That night, the 12th, is like the rematch of Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker. And then the 13th is the Super Bowl. And then obviously Monday the 14th being Valentine's Day. Neither one of you losers will ever have to worry about that, I'm sure. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to go fucking broke. So yeah, these are the things that I'm looking forward into my life.
My final thought, Tid's a piece of shit.
And sorry, did I say that?
Yeah.
That is Notorious TID. That is your bro, Danny O. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember, if you missed anything or want to catch it again, the archives are available on all major podcast providers. And of course, this video will be available up on godfathersofpodcasting.com. That's your bro, Danny O. My name is Donnie Da Silva. We will see you next time, because for now, we are done this party.
Peace.